Good morning. So today's daf from Mitzvah Study Zion. Thank Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zechon Ishmael Sli, but Gavriel Bashmuel. On the very bottom of Study Vav Amud Aleph, and we're starting this morning with the words Amalei Rav Ilish Le Rava. Questions that were asked from Rav Ilish to Rava. So as we've been discussing now, since the beginning of the 8th parak, there's a psura of Balaam, that while renting an animal from somebody, or for while borrowing an animal from somebody, so if you either hire him or ask him to work for you, even without money, and as long as that is concurrent with the borrowing of the item or the renting of the item, so then you are going to be putter, you will be exempt. And this is Sheila Babalim. We learned this out based on Psukim, in the Parsha in Mishpatim, specific to that of Sheila. So the Torah says that if the Balaam is Imo, if the owner is with you, so then you're going to be Pater. But as we learned over the course of the last couple of Dapim, owner being with you means it's a function of at the time of the Sheila. That as long as Bizman HaSheila, he's going to be working for you, either he's already working for you or at that point in time he agrees to work for you, so then you are going to be exempt. You're not going to have to pay for any onus that occurs. The Gemara yesterday asked a series of questions. Rami Brachama, in fact, is the author of a number of questions that were asked. The Gemara did not resolve any of the questions. A lot of detailed questions regarding what is considered She'ela Bebalim. We are in the very, very bottom of the Amud, and we're picking it up this morning from the words Amalei Rav Ilish L'Rav Amal Avdo Sevi Shalim Parasi Mahu. So let's say I do the following. Let's say I lend out my animal, and I say to my Evid, I have an Evid Kanani, and I say to my Evid, you know what, I want you to go together with my animal, work together with my animal. So again, if you were to work with your animal, so that's Sheila Babalim, and for sure, the person who borrowed it is going to be Potter. That goes without saying. But and yesterday, we discussed the question of Shliach, meaning what if I sent an agent that represents me? Is that me or is that not me? So that was a debate, as we saw. We saw it's a debate regarding whether or not a husband can deputize a person in order to be made for his wife's Nadarim, and the same debate said the Gemara regarding Sheila Babalim. If the owner of the animal doesn't work, but the owner appoints a shliach. Here, it's a little bit better. Could be better, could be worse. But it's a little bit better in that I'm now sending my Eved. So my Eved is certainly to a degree me. Right, Mashkana Eved Kana Rabo. Right, I own him. So to a certain degree, I am sending certainly something that is more connected to me. So the Gemara says, so mahu. So tibalaman damer shluchosh adam kamoso. Tibalaman damer shluchosh adam ina kamoso. So here the Gemara equivocates, and really, I could see it in one of two different ways. Even if you take a position on shlichus, I could still say that Evan may be different. For example, Tibailaman de Meshul Chashadim Kamoso, Hani Meir Shlech de Bar Mitzvah, Huaval Evan de la Bar Mitzvah, Hu, Lo. Look, if you say Shlech Chashadim Kamoso, that means I'm appointing a Jew to do something on my behalf. He is a Bar Mitzvah. Bar Mitzvah here meant in the literal sense, he's Chayiv and Mitzvos. I'm Chayiv and Mitzvos. He can serve as my representative. He'll be me. In fact, if you take a look at the Rashi over here, such a strong argument that one can make that when I'm appointing a Jew to do something on my behalf, so he really is me. Rashi writes, "Rishlichos nafkalan me'atem gamatem l'rabba shuchachem de'be'inan dumya de'meshaleach." As long as the shliach is a mirror image of the meshaleach, so then you can view them as one and the same. Shiyudin of nohagim bo v'zeh ein din shoel noig bo v'gam mashal she'en lecha klum. Here, however, when you're saying on Evid, Evid's not you, meaning he's not Chayv and Mitzvos the way you're Chayv and Mitzvos, he doesn't reflect you, and so therefore one can make the argument that even if a Shliach is you, but the Evid is not you. On the other hand, I could argue the other direction. Even if you say that we don't say Shliach, that the Shliach is not you, vis-a-vis She'ela Babalim, but honey, Mila Shliach Chaval Evid, Yad Evid Ki Yad Rabbo. Over here, you can make the argument that, yeah, but the Evid's even better, because the Evid, Yad Evid Ki Yad Rabbo, Masha Kana Evid Kana Rabbo, he really is you, in the sense that anything he picks up belongs to you. So financially, he's yours. So therefore, it can be considered shela babalim. So the Gemara says, "I'm alei mistaber yadeva ki ad rabo damya." So Gemara on this question, meaning on all the other questions that we asked yesterday, the Gemara did not take a side. The Gemara left the questions as nibaye. Here, the Gemara gives a very straight answer, and that is yadeva ki ad rabo. That when you send your eved, so that is considered shela babalim. Next, on the very bottom side of Amud Aleph, by Rami Barchama, baba nechse ishto. A husband vis-a-vis the chasim of his wife. So again, we discussed this yesterday. We get to discuss it again. And that is nichse malug. When a woman goes into a marriage. So, some assets of that she comes into, like a dowry, for example. So that could be written to the ksuva, and that's what's called nichse tzon barzel. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about nichse malug. So, in other words, she wants to leave any assets out of the ksuva, or, as a simpler example, let's say she acquired assets after she got married. So those assets now go into the marriage. It's hers, principally, but the payers belong to the husband. And this is what's called nichse malug. So, the husband on these, excuse me, the husband's on these assets. Shol havei osocha havei. So how do we view the husband in terms of his relationships to these assets? No. We know that he has a king in Peros, meaning he's entitled to the fruit. Any of the dividends of that, it belongs to him. We're not talking about that. We're talking about his custodial responsibility / obligation to that. Is he going to be viewed as a shol? Is he going to be viewed as a socher? On her nechse malug. So it's easier to talk now in terms of property, but let's say she has animals, and then animals are again given to her after the marriage just started. So now the husband who gets to enjoy the fruit of those animals, the labor of those animals. So when the husband uses them, is he a shoel or is he a socher? So let's start off by just give a quick explanation for each side. Let's start off with shoel. Shoel is easy, meaning what does he have to do in return for these animals? I know there's an answer to that, but for our purposes right now, let's just say nothing. Meaning, he takes them, he uses them, he gives them back to his wife, right? If the marriage should come to an end, he gives it back to her permanently. But in other words, he's basically borrowing the animals. So that's the argument to make that it's a shoel. What's the argument to make that it's a socher? He does pay for it in the sense that, and this is Rashi later on, that if she's captured, so then he's going to have to ransom her. He's going to have to redeem her. So it's not a classic schiras where, you know, you pay by the day, pay by the month, et cetera, et cetera. But there is some kind of remuneration that will happen, maybe, eventually. So again, so you can see both sides of it. That's why the Gemara asked the question. How do we view the husband vis-a-vis his wife's assets? Is he a shoel or is he a socher? In like any good multiple choice question, the answer is going to be C. So, but we're going to get there. Shoel havi osocher havi amar rava lefum chorfa shibashta. So finally, Rava says to Rami Bar Chama, it's not the first time in Shas we have this kind of comment by Rav Tarami Bar Chama. You know you're very sharp, but because you're so sharp, sometimes Shibashta, you make mistakes. Meaning, Rashi says in Erevin, you're so smart, you ask questions, but you rush into those questions, and you don't think it all the way through. Now it happens to be that in this regard, it really is not going to make a difference, because remember, we're talking about a marriage. What does that mean? It means that it's she's the owner. Sorry. She's the owner of the items, and because she's the owner of the items, since she is either renting them to him or lending them to him, either way, she's also working with him as well. She's his wife. So this is either Sheila Babalim or Schiris Babalim. Either way, he's going to be putter, as we now have kicked in the exemption of Balaam. So Ella Kikami Baile, so the Gemara says, you're right. So really, at this point in time, the question doesn't have any practical distinction. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we consider the following? Well, what if she got the cow before she got married, and then she goes into the marriage with the cow, and again, let's assume that the cow was not written into the ksuva, it's not nechse tzon barzel, it's still nechse malug, and now what? So remember, how did it start off? It started off where Agar Minapara, he was first renting the cow from her. In other words, they weren't married yet. So it's not Schiras Bebalim. And then they get married. Now, Shol Havi Osocha Havi. So now we get to ask the question, and now it's going to make a practical difference. After the marriage now, so it's her property. He's married to her. He gets them through the Takan of Nechse Malug. Now, as the nothing changed, meaning the animal still is by him, but what's changed now is that his relationship to the animal now is different. Previously, he was the classic renter of the animal. Now, he's entitled to it through the takana of Nechse Malug. So now...
No, but we had said before, the question is, when does it start?
Well, just one second. You'll see. So, Shohave or Shohave? Shohave v'asya shela bebalim, emafka schira shela bebalim. So the Gemara makes the following suggestion. Look, if he's now a Shoel, Shoel obviously has more liability than that of a Socher. So if we view the husband vis-a-vis his wife's property now as a Shoel, so now... the she'ela is going to reshape the relationship he has to this animal. Previously, he was a renter to the animal, renter shelo bebalim, and now he's a shoel once he got married, and of course, bebalim. In other words, the owner of the animal, his wife, is working with him when she is lending him the animal, meaning at the point of marriage. So the Gemara says, or maybe no. Maybe the way to view a husband vis-a-vis his wife's nechse malug is that he's a socher. Now, if he's a socher, considering that in this particular case, he was already renting the animal from her before the marriage, so maybe his schira status as a married man is going to be not a new schira status, but really a throwback to the original schiras that he rented from her before they got married. And what the Gemara now is trying to argue is that because the rental relationship existed before they got married, it remained status quo, same rental relationship, even as they're married. So the Gemara says, "Ma'ishna di ishoa have dasa shela bebalim, mafkas chira shela bebalim." So he says, "Chanami have tasty chiras bebalim, tepek chira shela bebalim." So to which the Gemara says, "Okay, but really, I don't understand." You see what happened with once we called them a Shoel? When we called them a Shoel, we say that once they get married, it rewrites the relationship that he has vis-a-vis the animal. So even if you're going to call him a Socher, I'm still going to argue that even though previously he was renting the animal, but now that they get married, it's a new schirus. It's a new type of rental agreement, one predicated on marriage, not on the classic rental that he rented before. So the Gemara again basically says, either way, I think once they get married, that reshapes the relationship he has towards the animal. It's a nechse malug relationship. So again, you want to call it schiras, you want to call it shela, it's not going to matter because it's beba'alim. The owner of the animal, the woman, his wife, is now working with him while she either rented to him or lent it to him. So the Gemara says, Ela kikami ba'i, ela remi bracha mekagon. So the Gemara says, fine. So here's the only time it's actually going to play out as a practical difference. Kigon da'agra I para me'ama. So let's suggest now the following. Before they get married, she rented an animal from somebody else. So she's now the one currently renting an animal, v'hado nasba. And afterwards now, she gets married, and she takes, and she's still, in other words, she's still within the terms of her rental of this animal, and she lends it to her husband. Now, remember, we discussed this back in the earlier parts of the Masechta. If I'm renting something from somebody, do I have a right to sublease it and sublend it to somebody else? And we can even further analyze this question, and that is that when I sublend it to somebody else, remember, I'm the socher, which means that I am not going to be chayv an ones, and meanwhile, when I sublend it, the shoel is going to be chayv an ones. And then we're going to have a very strange and really bizarre scenario. If an ones were to occur under the care of the shoel, the one who borrowed it, so had it been by me, I wouldn't have had to pay because I'm pater from ones. But now that it's by the borrower, he is chayv an ones. It's very unusual. And of course, the question is now, who does he pay? Does he pay the person he borrowed it from, who's renting it, is not the owner? Or does he pay the original owner? So if you remember back, this goes back to Daf Lamed Hei and Bab Metzia. So this was a machlokus between Rav Yossi and the Chachamim. So the Gemara, and so now, our question becomes the following. Now, it will make a difference in this regard. How do we view the husband? Do we view the husband as a socher or as a shoel? So the Gemara says, "V'ali b'derabban dami shoel mishal mesocher lo tibayelach divayda sheila bebalami." Now, according to the Chachamim, again going back to the Gemara back on Lamed Hey, so the Chachamim say that in such a scenario, the borrower is going to pay the renter. Okay, and so over here, so that means now that in this scenario, when the woman rented an animal, got married, and then lent it to her husband, so it's Shela Bebalim. So there's nobody's going to pay anything. So kitibai lachaliba de Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says, now the question does become now a pronounced question according to Rav Yossi. Because Rav Yossi is of the opinion that the borrower is going to have to pay the original owner. So now that the borrower is going to have to pay the original owner, damar tachzir para lebalim harishonim. So the para is going to have to go back to the original owner. My shol have or socher have. So now it's important to identify and define what is the husband's relationship to this animal. Is he considered a shol? Is he considered a socher? If he's considered a shol, so a shol is chayv in ones. If he's considered a socher is potter from ones. Okay. So that is that would be. It's a very limited scenario, but that would be the only case in which the identity of whether he's considered a socher or shoal is going to manifest in a practical difference. As I mentioned earlier, the answer, of course, is none of the above. When the husband, vis-a-vis his wife's property, and specifically his nechsem aluk property, is neither a shoal nor is he a socher. Well, what other option is there? Ella lokeach have. So the way we're going to view him is that he's a buyer. Now, when I say he's a buyer, obviously, he didn't buy the property from his wife. What the Chachamim did is that the Chachamim slapped this label on him as a takana, as an institution, for reasons which we're about to articulate, which we've done in the past many times as well. One of the institutions they made in Usha is Aisha Shemachra Benechzim Alug Bechayibala, that if a woman were to sell her Nechzim Alug while her husband's alive, a Mesa, and the woman dies. Now, when a wife dies, so that her husband inherits her property and her assets, and that's a Din Daraisa, what the Chachamim did is that they called him a lien holder on her property. U'abal motzi mi'adal kuchos, being that he's a lien holder on her property. And when is the origination point of the lien? And that is at the time of marriage. So now he's a lien holder on her property, going back to the time of marriage. That's what was instituted in Usha, is that he will be called a lokeach. He's a buyer of her property when he marries her. Again, there's no actual transaction. But the label of lokeach goes on her, so that now he is a lien holder, so that in the event that she sells any of the properties, so being that he's a lien holder, he can exercise his lien in order to take back the properties. Okay, and that's what a husband is vis-a-vis his wife's nechzei malug. He's not a socher, he's not a shol, but rather he's a lokeach. It does, of course, beg the question, which means now that in terms of what kind of financial responsibility does he have to his wife and her property, so the Gemara kind of didn't give us an answer. Meaning, if he's a socher, he's going to be potter from onsim. If he's a shol, he's going to be chayim and onsim. So the Gemara says neither. The Gemara says lokeach. What is the lokech vis-a-vis responsibility? The answer generally is, the question doesn't get off the ground. When you're a lokeach, it's yours. So the only one you're responsible to is you. So, and is the Gemara really suggesting now that if he takes her nechzei maluk property and is posheya with that property, you mean to tell me now that he doesn't have to pay her? Meaning, the only thing we're calling him a lokeach is vis-a-vis him becoming a lien holder on the property. But it's not his, and it only will become his if she dies.
Right.
So does that mean now that he has full exemption from any type of custodial responsibility on that property? It's hard to imagine. Tosfos says no. Fourth Tosfos on the Amud. Bam benechzei ishto lo shalve velo soch ave, umir nir liri, disher mechinam ave, v'chai b'pshia. So Tosfos says in the name of the Ri, that nah, he can't imagine that he's not going to have no liability whatsoever. He says he'll call him like a shomer chinam, which means that negligence. If he's negligent, so then he's going to have to pay his wife. But if it's a geneva v'aveda, and certainly if it's an ones, so then he... If it's geneva v'aveda, certainly if it's ones, so then he wouldn't have to pay. Okay. By Rami Bar Chama. Back to the Gemara. We are on Sadi Vavam and base halfway down the Amud. Next question. Rami Bar Chama. Baba nechze ishto mi ma'al. Okay, so it's a... So the scenario goes like this. Maus Hekdesh was in the generation above. Generation above died. And now the Maus Hekdesh went down to his daughter. daughter now inheriting the Maos HaKdesh. She didn't know at the time that it was Maos HaKdesh. Obviously, we're talking about Me'ila, so it was all this was Bishogeg. So the Maos HaKdesh went down to her, and now again, she's married. So what's the institution? The institution's called Nechsim Alug, which means now that the money now is going to go over to the husband, and the husband gets that money. Now, when I say gets the money, by the way, he only is allowed to enjoy the payros of that money. So what you're going to have to do is take that money, roll it over into property, and then he can eat the dividends of that, and she'll keep the principal. So far, so good. Okay, but now the problem is that it's Maos HaKdesh. So somebody misappropriated, so who can we blame? Now, blame over here can really be scattered around. There's a lot of people over here that we can point our finger at. So number one, we can point it at her because she gave the money to her husband. That's one candidate. Another candidate is the husband, because he received the money and eventually he's going to end up spending it. And there's actually a third candidate of who should be liable for Me'ila. And this one's a funny one. Who's going to be our third candidate for the possible Me'ila violation?
Anybody who touches the money.
No. It's funny, if I, in other words, I'm prepared for today somewhat, but if you had asked me before preparing, I wouldn't have guessed it. But the answer is the Chachamim. The Chachamim who instituted Nechsei Malug. Remember, Min HaTorah, what would have happened? What would have happened is that the money would have stayed by the woman. But it's the Chachamim through their institution, Nechsei Malug, who demand that the woman give the money over to her husband. So a third possible candidate of liability for Me'ila is going to be the Chachamim. They're the ones who instituted this. Watch the Gemara go to work. So the Gemara says, Mi Ma'al, Amarav Aman Le'mal. So the Gemara says, okay, so who are we going to assign blame for misappropriation? So the Gemara says, well, let's rule out the husband because, look, it's true, he's looking forward to creating a kinyan on his wife's property, but only that which is mutter to him. In other words, he simply has no interest in acquiring property that's not mutter to him. Hektish money is not mutter to him. So he's not interested in even acquiring it. Now, Timel Ihi, so the Gemara says, well, why don't we now put the fault of Me'il on her? So the Gemara says, De'eter namelo nichala delikne. So the Gemara says, okay, but she also, her interest is only creating a kinyan on money that's mutter, not money that's usser. Nim'alu Beisdin. I didn't see this one coming. So the Gemara says, well, what about Beisdin? Now again, where's Beisdin at fault? So look at this Rashi. So interesting. Nim'alu Beisdin Rashi. She Yisrael Sheba Oso Dor. Meaning we're going to look at the Beisdin at that generation and basically say it's your fault. Why? Because it's a Nechsei Malug institution, and I love this part. This part's so interesting. And the only way that institutions can continue from generation to generation is only based on the backs of Beisdin that are currently operating. So you are the current Beisdin. And because of you, you may have not been the originator of such an institution, but you're the perpetuator of this institution, and therefore, you therefore should be liable. V'al yedeyem no'agos chukos ha'misukanim letzibor. And it's because of you, so the takanas perpetuate. And it's as if they're the ones who actually instituted Kinyan Zeh. Vinitsu aim, Vinitsu haim, Hamakdim lechnechse hektish, Votsiam lechulan. And it's because of their institution that the money goes from her to him, and they're the ones who are Yotzei lechulan, took the money and profaned the money, bringing it to the state of Chulin. Somebody therefore should be liable, and maybe should be based in. Okay, I also thought that was interesting. So the Gemara goes on to say, Nimala Beisdin, Ki Avdu Rabban Takanta, Vamru, Balokeh Chave. Yes, it's true that the Chachamim made such an institution, and yes, the Chachamim slapped a Lokeh label on the husband, but Leheterly, Yisur Lo Avdu Rabban Takanta, but that's only for Heter and not for Isser. So the Gemara says, so now we kind of struck out. Literally, right? Three strikes. Meaning the husband, no. Wife, no. Beis Din, no. So the Gemara says, Ela Merava ba'ama lechishiyotzi mida dehavi amotzi ma'oz hektish lechulin. So the Gemara says, okay, at the point where the money comes down to her and then gets passed over to the husband, so at this point in time, we cannot say that anybody was ma'oz hektish, because from an institution standpoint, nobody wanted the money to be passed since it's Isser money, not Heter money. But if and when the husband actually physically takes the money and spends the money, so then he's going to be ma'oz hektish, the Gemara says. So the answer is going to go back to choice A, but not immediately, only when he actually spends the money. We are continuing the Gemara Tzadi Vav Amud Beis, towards the bottom of the Amud. Ibailu kichesh basa machmas malach amai. You borrowed an animal and you bring the animal, you return the animal. Animal's a little bit weaker, a little bit thinner. You work the animal. Okay. Now, let's assume, just for the purpose of having a, you know, a good discussion, you fed the animal. Obviously, you weren't negligent with the animal, but okay. But you worked the animal, and the animal's now a little thinner. So, if it died, meaning not if it thinned out, but if it died while doing work. So, are you going to be chayv in such a scenario? So, neima lav leukme bechilta shilta. You know, when I borrowed the animal, I wasn't planning on just letting it sit in the canopy and just, you know, sunbathe in the canopy. The reason why I borrowed the animal is to work the animal, and you knew that. And so, therefore, there are certain things that you, the owner of the animal, are going to have to respect and honor. I borrow the animal to use the animal. I made normal usage of the animal. If through normal usage of the animal dies, I don't have to pay for that. So here also, if the animal just thinned out a little bit, and again, it came as a result of normal usage, I don't have to pay for that. So it goes without saying that if the animal thinned out while working, you're going to be potter. Even if the animal died during work, you're going to be potter as well. Because again, this argument's a very compelling argument. I didn't borrow the animal so that it would sunbathe in a canopy. I borrowed the animal to work, and you knew that. That's why you lent me the animal. That's the whole purpose of the loan. So that I would work the animal. So, as long as I didn't do anything which was negligent, and I worked it in normal usage working, and it thinned out or it even died, I'm going to be potter. Gemara tells the following incident. There was a person who borrowed a hammer from his friend, and it's burned, the hammer broke. So go bring witnesses that you didn't do anything that was deviant behavior with the hammer. You made normal usage of the hammer, and therefore you're going to be potter. So again, there's this idea of mesa machmas malacha. It could be true by an animal, and as we're learning right now, it could also be true by an object. If I'm borrowing an object, and I'm using it like it's normally used, and then it breaks while usage, so I'm going to be punter, even as a borrower. Okay, now remember, Rava's psak was bring witnesses to say that you didn't do anything abnormal. Now, only begs the next question, well, what if you don't have witnesses? So all you have now is your word. Okay, now it gets interesting over here, because all you have is your word, but remember, you are a shoah, which means that for most intent and purposes, you're going to be held liable. So over here, this is the only thing that's going to exempt you, is this p'tur of Meisa Machmas Malacha. You're going to be chayv in Geneva Vaveda, you're going to be chayv in Ones. So this is the only thing that's going to potter you. So when you have witnesses, so now it's corroborated, it's validated by witnesses that this is in fact what happened. But without witnesses, so now what? So Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you what. Person borrowed a hammer from his friend. So Rav says, okay, you got to give him a new hammer. In other words, it broke, and there were no witnesses, and so Rav says, you got to give him a new hammer, and you got to give him a new hammer. So, Amalei Rav Kahana v'Ravasi l'Rav Dina Hachi. So the students are standing by Rav, and they look at Rav, and they say, wait one second. Is that really the halacha? Now, without any more explanation, so what was the problem with Rav's psak? Rav's psak seems to be good psak. So as Rashi points out over here, the following flaw is found in Rav's psak. Look at the top Rashi and Sadi Zayin Amud Aleph. Dina Hachi, Shishalam Kli Asuya Masukan, that the borrower has to pay now, has to replace it with a brand new hammer. Vatanan. We go back to Baba Kama. Gabi Nizak and Teshlomenezek, Balamisha Balam Metaplam Benevela, Shisham Loha Nevela Shabahemto Shemesa Ide Zer, Shizika, Lo, Vallav Mosif and Masham de Mayhem. We know that in the world of Nezek, so let's say my animal were to damage your animal, even kill your animal. So now I have to pay you. What do I pay you? So you keep the nevela, meaning you, the owner of the animal, whose animal just died. So you keep the nevela. That nevela obviously has some value to it. So what we're going to do now is we're going to assess. How much was the damage? How much was the nevela? What's the difference? I'll pay you the difference between the current value of the animal, the dead carcass of the animal, and the damage that I did. Meaning the difference between a live animal and a dead animal. But that's it, though. I'm not replacing you with a new animal. You keep the nevela. It has some value, and I'm only paying you the difference. So over here should be the same thing. I took your hammer. I borrowed your hammer. I broke your hammer. Fine. Now, whatever its value is, I don't know. I can't imagine it's a lot, but it doesn't matter. It's not the point. Whatever its value is, so that belongs to the original owner. And now what I have to do is I have to pay a difference. I don't have to give him a brand new hammer. I have to give him the difference between whatever the value is of the leftovers of this hammer and the cost of a new hammer. But I don't have to pay him for. I don't have to pay for a brand new hammer. So the Gemara says that was the objection of Rav Kahana and Rav Asi to the Psak of Rav. So Vishasik Rav, and Rav was quiet at that point in time, meaning a concession that the Talmidim were right. So the Gemara says Vehuchasak Rav Kahana and Rav Asi Demahadele Tavra. So So the Gemara says, okay, and that's in fact the halacha. Halacha is that you give over the pieces of the hammer, again, whatever its value is, deduct that off the now price of a new hammer, and you pay that, and you pay the difference.
You say new hammer, it can't be a used hammer, equivalent
to
what he borrowed.
It sounds like a reasonable argument you're making. Okay, how gaver deshal davla mechavre? So there was a person who borrowed a bucket from his friend. Itbar, the bucket broke. Asla kamedra. Papa amalei icy sahade to lo shanis bei veipater. So our papa says again, same basic psak. Go bring witnesses that you didn't do anything that was deviant, and you'll be potter. So. How gaver deshal shunra mechavre? So this story is great. So there's a person who borrowed a cat from his friend. Now, why do you want to borrow a cat from somebody? I personally have no idea why a person would want to borrow a cat. Yeah. But again, I'll leave my own personal feelings out of this. So the so you borrowed a cat from somebody, but you have a mouse problem. You have mice problem, as we'll see in just a moment. So you got the shunra, right? So it's going to sound like we're at the end of Pesach right now, at the end of the Seder. So you got the shunra in order to take care of all the mice you have in your house. And this is why the story gets great. Chavor alei achbari vekatluhu, a revolution, a mouse revolution. So the mice, right? The mice got together and they assaulted and they ganged up on the cat. They killed the cat. And now, can you imagine? So you have to now go back to the owner and give him an explanation. Well, I know that generally speaking, I know how it works that cat kill mice, but you're not going to believe it, but this is what happened. The mouse congregated and they got together and they organized revolution and they killed your cat. And so, and now you lay down the carcass of the cat on his front lawn and say, look, I'm really sorry, but you know, here's the remnants of your cat. Now, Yosef Rav Asher v'kami badli ki'agav namai. So now, what would be the story over here? Now remember, for the show, for the person who borrows something, he's only got one line of defense. And that is Mesa Machmas Malacha. That if it dies in the course of work, so then you are going to be potter. Is this qualify as Mesa Machmas Malacha? It's a good question. That's what the Gemara is asking. So ki Mesa Machmas Malacha dami Allah, is this going to be considered Mesa Machmas Malacha or not? Amalei Rav Mordechai le Rav Ashi hachi amar avimi me'agrinim mishmei derava gavra dineshei katluhu. So the Gemara says, well, let's make the following comparison. Let's say you have a man that was killed by women. So lo dina v'lo dina. So Lodina Velodina is an expression the Gemara uses. Rashi over here doesn't explain, but elsewhere Rashi says, basically, we don't need to equivocate, which means that this is not normal behavior. Now, in this, it's a very terse answer to our question. Is this considered Mesa Malacha or not? So Rashi says, just very succinctly, right, the Neshe Katluhu lo haya lo lipol biyadan. Shouldn't have happened. Meaning what should have happened is that the man should have not been killed by the woman. The man should have killed the woman. So over here, in our equivalency, the cat should have killed the mouse. The fact that it didn't, I don't have any explanation, any logical expression, but that's not what should have happened. So in other words, it was within the right. It's considered normal usage on the part of the borrower where he can now let the cat go and try to kill the mice. And what we should have expected to have happened is that the cat should have killed the mouse. The fact that the cat died, I can't explain it, but it shouldn't have happened, and that still qualifies as normal usage, and we're going to call that Mesa Machmas Malacha. Igadamer, the Gemara has a slightly different version of how to say it over. Achlach bara tuva v'chava v'meis. So the Gemara says, in this second version, the cat did successfully kill the mice, but then after killing the mice, he ate the mice, and he just ate a little too much mouse, and with the excess mouse diet, so the cat unfortunately died overeating. Okay, is the cause? Just one second. Let's just finish the thought. So Yosef Rav Asher v'kamayin baki agav namai. So again, now same conclusion. Is this considered Mesa Machmas Malacha? So Amalei Rav Mordechai the Rav Asher acham avim imagrunya gavra d'neshe kalu lo dina v'lo dina. So again, if a woman kills a man, lo dina v'lo dina. Like there should be, it's unequivocal that shouldn't have happened. That the man should have killed the woman. Again, how did that happen? Why did that happen? I don't know, but it shouldn't have happened. So here also, I didn't see it happening any other way, other than the cat killing the mouse, and that would have ended the story. The fact that the cat died, Mesa Machmas Malacha. I don't have a good explanation why that happened, but it shouldn't have happened, and it's considered normal usage, and therefore the bar is going to be exempt. Yeah.
So if this is the only way out that a shoal can, and he doesn't have witnesses, can he swear that this is what happened?
Doesn't seem that way. The Gemara does not offer that as a suggestion. It's a good question, but the Gemara does not offer that as a suggestion. So the Gemara says, okay, so now, you just went through the first part of the eighth parak of Bab Metziah, and we now have learned together the Ptur of She'ela Bebalim. So as long as the owner of the item is working for me at the time of the She'ela, so then we're going to be exempt from cases of Ones. So now, and even Gneva Vaveda, Pshia debatable. So now, I'll do the following. Or the Gemara is suggesting it. Mm-hmm. So now, right before I'm about to borrow something, so I say to the person, do me a favor, can you get me a cup of water? Mm-hmm. So now, he's going to be working for me. I understand this is not a high-end employment, but again, there's no threshold for what he needs to do.
Work.
Huh?
That
was Rav Hamanuna, and the Gemara rejected Rav Hamanuna.
Okay.
So you get me a cup of water, you'll fetch me a cup of water. Now you, the owner of the item, are going to be working for me at the time when I'm borrowing the item. That's She'ela Babalim. So Ashkayan Maya Dahavi She'ela Babalim V'Ishe'ela Babalim. So now what you basically did, and the Gemara is suggesting it, is that you can create an umbrella protection for yourself so that you won't be Chayiv and Onis and Gneva Vav. Aveda. Okay. Now, the Gemara says, is there a counter
for the owner?
The Gemara says, you bet there is. V'pikechu. If the owner is wise, name alay. So what the owner will say to the borrower is, oh, you know what? No problem at all. Of course I'll get you a cup of water, but first, you'll borrow the item from me, and then I'll get you the cup of water. As again, we learned throughout now this eighth perek, if the she'ela sabalim happens after the she'ela sachefetz, so then it doesn't, that you don't have the exemption. So shal bereshiva hadash kayach. So first borrow, and then I'll go get you the cup of water. Okay, so we have now learned strategies for both from the perspective of the borrower and the perspective of the owner. The Gemara, by the way, just as a hopefully an intelligent comment, the Gemara does not tip its cap in terms of favoring which is good, which is bad. Right? The Gemara doesn't give out labels of, is this a good thing, is this not a good thing? These are just simply built-in exemptions that the Torah provides. And if you want to make use of an exemption, fine. And if the owner knows about it and wants to avoid the exemption, so fine. The Gemara doesn't give labels of good or bad over here. Amarava mikre dardiki shatala tavcha. Sorry. Mikre dardiki shatala tavcha umana. Umana and it's farmasa. So the many different jobs that a person is employed basically by the city, right? The mikre dardike, the school teacher, the community school teacher, and the shatala. Rashi describes him as a. As a noter kramim lamechsa, right? He's going to be a sharecropper, basically, an umana. So Rashi over here describes him as being a bloodletter. The tabach is a butcher. The umana is a bloodletter. Could be that he's a moal. So and. The barber, the town barber. So kulon beidan avida tayu kisheela bebalam dami. So all of them, while they're doing work, so they're considered sheela babala, meaning that if you were to borrow something from them at the time when they work, since they're working for the entire community, so therefore they're working for you, okay? And therefore, when you borrow something from them, since they are the owner of the item and they're working for you, so therefore it falls under the umbrella of sheela babalam. And then, interestingly, you're not going to have to pay for ones, you're not going to have to pay for gneva va'aveda. Okay. Amar le Rabbanan, le Rava. Shilon Mar, the rabbi said the following to Rava. Would you lend something to us? Okay. And it's a rather unusual story. Meaning basically, the students understand that right now Rava is working for them. Now again, we're using the term not super literally. Working for them meaning he is the Rebbe of the community. He's teaching them. So when we say Sheila Babalam, remember, it doesn't have to be an employment, right? It doesn't have to be schiros. It can even be just simply, I'm right, he's doing me a favor. Over here, Rav is doing them a favor. He is teaching them Torah. So now they're asking to borrow his items. And being that he's working for them, so therefore they're going to be covered under this exemption of Sheila Babalam. They're not going to have to pay for Ones Geneva Vaveda. So, Ikbid, Rava realizes now what's going on, obviously, and he gets very angry. You want to take me out of my money? Meaning you're going to borrow my items? You're not going to have to pay for anything that happens to the items? Not Geneva, not Veda, not Ones? And you want to take advantage of this situation? So the Gemara says, Adarava, Asun Sheultenli. And what Rava does now is he turns everything around on them. And he says, no, you know what? Let me be honest. In this relationship of me teaching you Torah, it's really you who are indebted to me, working for me. Why? What's the argument? So the Gemara says like this, because look, I right now, I'm the driver of this bus. This bus meaning this learning relationship. I'm right now, we're learning this Masechta, but if we want, you're right, I'm done with Bab Metzia. What have we done so far? 97 Dapim of Bab Metzia, I'm done. I want to do another Masechta. Now it happens to be I can't do that. I'm in the Daf Yomi program, so I can't do that. So at least in this, you know, in this slot. But in other words, Rav is saying I can change from one Masechta to another. Therefore, you are really employed by me, being that I'm in control, and so therefore I can borrow something from you and fall under this exemption of She'ela Babalim. Now the Gemara says Velohi. The Gemara says now who's right? So the Gemara says basically, I they're both wrong or they're both right. You know, you can say it either way. If it's Yuma Dekala, right, during Kala, that is basically the conventions that take place, the rabbinic conventions that take place, where he has to teach them the halachas of Pesach before Yanta, before Pesach, and Sukkot, before Sukkot, etc., etc. So, So Iushalahu, so he'll borrow things from them during Kala. Inu Shalile Bishar Yume. And they'll borrow things from him during the rest of the year. Meaning during the rest of the year where he can dictate what they're gonna learn, so he'll borrow from them. Okay. So basically, different points of the year. Is going to be different relationships in terms of who's going to be in the driver's seat and who is quote unquote working for whom. Okay, one last story we'll finish off today to get to the Mishnah. Meremar Barchinya Ugar Kunaisa Bechuzai. So Meremar rented a mule. Anafik Ludluye to Una Bahadayu, and he went to go fill up water, and the owner went together with him. Pashu Ba Umes. Now, the renter was grossly negligent with the mule, and the mule died. Also, come to Rava. And now they go to Rava for a ruling. Now, remember, this was Bibalim. The owner was there at the time. And the truth of the matter is, the owner didn't need to be there at the time. He needed to be there at the time of Skiris, but okay. But anyway, but the owner was there. So now this is Bibalim. So, also come to Rava Chayvu. So Rava says, you're Chayev. You're Prashaya. You were negligent. Now, Amrle Rabban Larava Pshia Babalim Hu. So he says, well, wait one second. The owner was there. So don't we have an exemption? Why did you say he was liable? Ichsif. So when Rava realized that, so Rava was embarrassed, meaning he seemingly forgot the halacha of Sheila Babalim, or in this case Schir's Babalim. So Lasofik Lamilsa Delameser to Unahu Denafak. So the Gemara says, but later it was discovered that he went out not to help, but rather just to oversee and to make sure that it would be the mule was properly used. But he didn't go out there to help. So it was not Sheila Babalim. So it turns out now that Rava was right. Now So the Gemara says, but remember what we did just a couple days ago. Meaning, yes, there's a p'tur of Ba'alim, but everyone agrees there's a p'tur Ones. Everyone agrees there's a p'tur Gneva Va'aveda. What about Pshia? And if you remember, the debate really centered around whether or not the p'tur can go all the way back to Shomer Chinam. Meaning the Ptur certainly exists by Shaul, certainly exists by Shomer Sachar. Does it go back to Shomer Chinam? So that was a Machlokas. So the Gemara points out over here, well, truth of the matter is, even if it was Bebalim, if you subscribe to the viewpoint of the Ptur of Balim does not go all the way to Pshia, so then Rava was right. And why was he embarrassed? So lo misha pasha bahu. So the Gemara says, okay. So the truth of the matter is, it wasn't Pshia. So ela ignuva ignav, umesa kadarka, beganav. So what happened was that the animal was stolen and the animal died in the house of the ganav. Havi. Vasil kama de Rava vechayvuhu. So then they went to Rava, and that Rava said, yuchayv amale rabban la Rava ganeva babalami. Now we understand how the story developed and why Rava was in fact embarrassed. Because now the question is not a question of Pshia, the question now is a question of Gneva, and now Rava says, oh, Gneva? You're Chayven Gneva, right? You are a Socher, you're Chayven Gneva. To which the Gemara says, but wait one second, the owner was with him at the time. So Ichsif, and that's why Rava was embarrassed. But then the Gemara points it out, yeah, but let's remind each other that he only did so because of the owner only went out there not to help, but just to oversee and to make sure that there wouldn't be any kind of abuse of the animal. But he didn't go out there to help. So this is not considered Sheila Babalim, and therefore Rava was right that he's going to be Chayev, that the Socher is going to be Chayev in Geneva. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud.